Support for this podcast and the following message comes from BlackRock. Want to know what's happening in the markets? On The Bid, a podcast from BlackRock, we break down what's happening in the world of investing and explore the forces changing the economy and finance. From stock market outlooks and megatrends to geopolitics and technology, BlackRock speaks to thought leaders and industry experts from around the globe about the biggest trends moving markets. Subscribe to The Bid wherever you get your podcasts.
From the New York Times, I'm Michael Barbaro. This is The Daily. Today, Robert Mueller's Russia investigation is unnerving Washington. The aggressive tactics he's using to get Trump's team to talk. And while having lunch at a DC steakhouse, a Times reporter overhears just how much those tactics are rattling the White House legal team. It's Tuesday, September 19th. Mattapuzzo, what happened on July 26th?
This is a Wednesday, early morning, dawn, and Paul Manafort, President Trump's former campaign chairman, is asleep at home in Northern Virginia. And totally unannounced, the FBI forces its way into his home. This is not your typical boom, 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 open up, where the FBI and, you know, a groggy Paul Manafort puts on a slipper and comes to the door. This is the FBI forcibly going into the home and searching for evidence.
Wow.
So they are all through Manafort's house. They make off with binders full of documents. They copy his hard drive. They even photograph the suits that were hanging in his closet. This is the most public and the most overt move that Bob Mueller, the special counsel, has made in the, you know, 4 months or so that he has been investigating Trump world.
And besides raiding people at home, as happened in the Manafort example, what are some of the other tactics that Mueller and his team are using as they interview these people and investigate the case?
Exhibit A would be the way they handled Manafort after the raid, right? So they told Manafort, we expect to charge you. We expect to indict you, which sends a really tough message right up front. And then they followed that up where they dropped a subpoena on Manafort's own lawyer to come and testify in the case.
So asking his lawyer to testify
against him.
Wow.
Which is so unusual.
And why is that so unusual?
Well, the attorney-client privilege, that protection that what you, your relationship with your lawyer is sort of sacrosanct, that is enshrined not just in law, but also in Justice Department policies. You can subpoena a lawyer. That happens. But it is the most, among the most sensitive things as a prosecutor that you can do. And it just, it's just another sign. He's just not leaving anything on the table. Every option he has, he's going to take it, even if it's a really aggressive.
So to that point, what do these tactics used tell us about how Bob Mueller is conducting this investigation into Russian meddling in the election?
The coverage of Mueller's team has been portrayed a little bit like the beginning of Ocean's 11, where George Clooney's sort of going out and, you know, and that he's assembled this team.
Special counsel Robert Mueller now has more than a dozen seasoned prosecutors.
This is a highly elite team.
This is a powerhouse team.
We're going to need a safecracker, and we're going to need a guy who's good at pickpocketing.
16 in all, they bring experience in long-term investigations, going after organized crime, money laundering, cyber terrorism, and foreign bribery.
Got a guy who prosecuted the Bonanno crime family, and we've got a guy who took on Enron, got an espionage expert.
Some even speak Russian.
There really isn't anything that this team is going to come across that they're not going to be equipped to deal with.
Mueller is moving quickly. He's moving aggressively. And we talked to one of the investigators that looked into Bill Clinton and all of those shenanigans in the 1990s. And here's what he said. He said, they are setting a tone. It's important early on to strike terror in the hearts of people in Washington, or else you will be rolled. You want people saying to themselves, man, I had better tell these guys the truth.
So Bob Mueller is actively seeking to instill fear in the heads and the hearts of the people he's investigating here.
If that's not the intention, that is certainly the read.
As best you can tell, because I know this stuff is supposed to be confidential, who is the special counsel going after, trying to interview, investigating?
We know that they have put the White House on notice that they intend to interview many members of the senior staff, current and former. So the people around the president are all expected to get questioned. Now, outside the White House, we know the two people that are being looked at intensely are Michael Flynn, the former National Security Advisor, who is getting looked at for his travel and what he's disclosed about his lobbying and his relationships with foreigners. And then there's Paul Manafort, who's getting looked at not just for his relationships with Ukraine or Russia, but they're also looking at his taxes. And they want to know whether he has offshore bank accounts that hold money that he hasn't paid taxes on or that he hasn't disclosed. And so when the FBI raids his house, one of the reasons they're taking pictures of his suits is that is a way to tell kind of how much money is going out, right? If you say, well, we know he only makes X amount of dollars, but man, how's he affording all these suits, right? That's something they do in money investigations a lot, is look for signs of spending that don't match up with earning.
Matt, what you're describing there in the Flynn and the Manafort investigation so far doesn't seem like whether or not people around the president colluded with Russia in meddling in the election. They seem like tax fraud or failure to disclose a lobbying client.
Yeah, that's right. And if you are in or around President Trump's orbit, you are probably thinking, why the heck is Bob Mueller, investigator of all things Russia,
right,
messing around on some financial disclosure document that Flynn may or may not have filled out correctly, or Paul Manafort's taxes? And there's two things. One, Mueller has taken a very broad view of his authority, and some people would probably argue too broad. But most importantly, they got to keep your eye on the ball here, right? If you can put pressure on people like Flynn and Manafort with these less related charges, then you put pressure on them to cooperate and tell you more about the stuff you want to know. I mean, this is kind of white-collar investigation 101. You look for the people who have vulnerabilities on other stuff, and then you squeeze. And so what we're seeing now is the squeeze.
The squeeze being, I will go after you.
I'm going to indict you. I'm going to raid your home. I'm going to subpoena your lawyer. Nothing is safe. I think there is a school of thought that put the squeeze on people like Flynn and Manafort and see if they have a story to tell about Donald Trump.
The aggressive tactics that you've described so far seem to be applied mostly to people who've left the president's orbit. They're outside of the White House, either because they were fired from the campaign or from the White House. Is there a difference in how the special counsel is treating those who have left the president's orbit and those who actually work in the White House and are the president himself?
Absolutely. You're not going to have FBI agents showing up and forcing their way into the White House, right? I mean, that's not going to happen. So what you're seeing now is you're seeing Mueller and the White House are having this sort of very professional back and forth.
Special Counsel Robert Mueller sent a letter this week telling the White House to preserve all documents related to the June 2016 meeting at Trump Tower.
Well, we're going to make these documents available to you.
Staff members received notice on Wednesday from White House counsel informing them to preserve text messages, emails, notes, voicemails, and any other communications related to the meeting.
You don't need to subpoena for them. We'll give you everything you need, and then we will make our staff available to be interviewed.
Are some of these staffers likely to cooperate?
I would say so. They are.
So it's the White House is trying to strike this posture of, we're in total cooperation mode. You don't need to be aggressive. And boy, if all they have to do is read the papers and see what happens to people like Manafort. So, you know, look, the Trump White House does not want to be seen as not cooperating with Bob Mueller.
For President Trump, the special counsel's probe of possible ties between the White House and the Russians comes down to two words: witch hunt.
The entire thing has been a witch hunt.
Matt, I'm interested in why you think that the president, after being so vocally angry for so long about this investigation and about Bob Mueller, has gotten kind of quiet. What's that about, do you think?
Well, there's been turnover on his legal team, and I think the idea has been really driven home to the president that That is a counterproductive route, going scorched earth against Bob Mueller. Hmm. We want to strike a collaborative tone, a cooperative tone.
The White House special counsel, Ty Cobb, issued a statement. The White House favors anything that accelerates the conclusion of his work fairly. The White House is committed to fully cooperating with Mr. Mueller.
And look, you can see why. If you believe that this investigation is nonsense, which is what the president has said he believes, then the fastest thing you can do to get out from under it is just to cooperate 100%.
Matt, thank you very much.
Great to be back.
After the break, the behind-the-scenes battle inside the White House over whether it's cooperating too much. We'll be right back.
What is it about Dana-Farber that makes it such a powerful adversary against cancer? It's hundreds of Dana-Farber researchers and clinicians making new discoveries inspired by the work of previous Dana-Farber discoverers. At Dana-Farber Cancer Institute, nothing is as effective against cancer as a relentless succession of breakthroughs. Learn more about their momentum. Go to danafarber.org/stories.
Ken Vogel, you had a moment that reporters dream about. So give us the scene.
Yes, I went to BLT Steak. It's a restaurant precisely 171 feet from the Times DC Bureau. Someone mapped it on Twitter, so can't take credit for that. But to meet a source, we sat down outside and ordered, chit-chatting away. And about midway through the lunch, my source says, "Hey, isn't that Trump lawyer?" And I turn around and notice the trademark handlebar mustache of Ty Cobb, who was brought in to be the internal lead within the White House in handling the Russia investigation. And he happens to be dining with another gentleman who I did not immediately identify.
Wait, let me just interrupt you for a minute. When you see Ty Cobb is with this distinguished mustache and you realize who it is, do your ears perk up? Is this like inherently intriguing sight?
Yes, they definitely perked up. So we kind of wrap up our lunch, and I know this source works in the same direction as the Times DC Bureau. And he's like, "You coming?" I'm like, "Actually, why don't you go ahead? I'm just going to hang out here, get another iced tea or two." And so I sit there, and they proceed to talk for another 30, 45 minutes while I'm sitting there. You know, I kept on waiting for them to sort of notice me there and look over and wonder what I was doing and at least tone it down, decrease the volume on their conversation, if not stop entirely. But they didn't do that. In fact, they proceeded to continue talking about this super sensitive stuff as various people who I felt like they should have recognized stopped by to say hi to me because they noticed me on the street, including our colleague Maggie Haberman, who's a pretty recognizable young woman, and a couple other Times DC reporters and some other random sources. And they're all coming by like, "Hey, what are you doing sitting there by yourself?" And I'm kind of like giving them the the neck like stop signal. And nonetheless,
go away.
Yeah. These guys continued going on.
So Ken, what do you think might be going on at first? What are you hearing and observing? You know that it's Ty Cobb sitting at one side of this table, but you don't know who's on the other side, right?
Yeah, I mean, it pretty quickly became clear once my source left and I was able to fully focus on this fascinating conversation that they were talking about their legal strategy vis-a-vis the Trump-Russia investigation. And in the course of this, as I'm taking notes, I kind of slickly hold out my phone without like aiming the camera at them and take a photo of them across the table to be able to capture who the second guy was. And I sent that photo to my colleagues in the Times DC Bureau who cover the Trump investigation as I'm, continuing to sit there eavesdropping on this conversation. I sent to them and I say, "Hey, I'm listening to Ty Cobb talk about the Russia investigation legal strategy with this guy. Do you know who it is?" And instantly one of my colleagues responded, "Oh, that's totally John Dowd, Trump's lead outside attorney." And I was like, "Wow, so it is."
So what are some of the specific things that you're hearing in the restaurant from these two guys?
So I'm overhearing these two lawyers who represent Trump, albeit in different capacities, one inside the White House and one outside the White House as a personal attorney, talking about their strategy, which appears to be a shared strategy towards dealing with these document production requests from Robert Mueller, the special counsel. Ty Cobb articulates this perspective to John Dowd that producing more documents to Mueller and fulfilling his request, even erring on the side of inclusion when it came to determining which documents to provide him, would ultimately serve the president's interest by revealing to Mueller their position, which is what Ty Cobb put it in this lunch, that we are not hiding anything. And that in so doing, it might lead Mueller to wrap up his investigation, at least wrap up its focus on the president and move on. Now, Cobb expresses some frustration during this lunch that Don McGahn, the White House counsel, does not share this perspective and is taking a much more conservative approach to document production. Now, subsequently, we talked to folks who were close to McGahn who articulated his viewpoint, which is that revealing too much and giving over too many documents might limit the ability of President Trump in either this investigation down the road or potentially future investigations or legal dealings down the road to assert presidential privilege. This idea that some of the stuff that a president does is more properly kept from public consumption or even consumption of prosecutors. And that was something that might hamper or damage not just Trump in this situation, but Trump down the road and maybe even the institution of the presidency and future presidents, that they might be less able to assert privilege if there was this precedent of Trump in this case turning over a wide range of documents to the special counsel.
What's interesting about that is that our colleague Matt Apuzzo was just telling us that the White House seems to have settled on a strategy of cooperation, broadly speaking. But it sounds like what you discovered over this lunch is that behind that, there's an internal fight over whether you can be too cooperative.
Yeah, and to some extent, this is a fight that you would expect that they would be having just because of the difference in function that Ty Cobb has brought in to steer the president clear of this investigation. Don McGahn, on the other hand, is representing the office of the presidency as an institution, and there might be competing imperatives there. That said, it was fascinating to hear this debate actually playing out in real time at a moment at which the White House and the Trump legal team are trying to settle, or maybe have already settled on a strategy for navigating this investigation. And it was also really illuminating to hear the way in which this debate has kind of manifested itself in distrust and suspicion, to the point where Cobb at one point said that he thinks McGahn has a spy, someone who is reporting back to McGahn on what Ty Cobb's operation is doing.
Wow.
And beyond the spy or Cobb's suspicion that there's a spy in his midst, we actually, in talking to folks, heard that some of these lawyers believe that someone in their midst might have a wiretap, be wearing a tap for Bob Mueller, the special counsel. Jeez. Talking to folks that they kind of poo-pooed that and said, no, that's just paranoia. There's no way that he would do that. But it just goes to show you how much distrust there is and suspicion on this legal team that is ostensibly working towards the same end.
I mean, if you're at the point where there's that much distrust inside his legal team, I mean, how can they possibly mount a defense and operate together and make this work vis-a-vis this extraordinarily muscular, aggressive special counsel that we've just been talking about?
Yeah, it's a good question. And this is something that the special counsel, I think, tries to exploit, or any prosecutor tries to exploit, that being fault lines and divisions within the various folks who have attracted interest. And so if Mueller's goal is to foment distrust and divisions, I think you could say mission accomplished.
So, Ken, finally, I have to just say, you're overhearing these White House lawyers at a prominent D.C. steakhouse talking loudly in front of a Times reporter about how the president has nothing to hide. If this were a spy novel, they know exactly who you are.
Yeah, and I've seen some suggestion to that effect, that this was somehow a plan and an effort by Cobb or Dowd to get out their perspective. But in our reporting, we talk to people about these different arguments and divergent viewpoints. But we also told them, this is how we know that this debate is going on. We overheard this conversation. Well, that got back to both Don McGahn and White House Chief of Staff John Kelly, and they were none too pleased that that Ty Cobb and, to a lesser extent, John Dowd had put them in this position by being so careless with this incredibly sensitive information. They called Ty Cobb in and, we understand, expressed that displeasure, essentially chewed him out over having this conversation in this incredibly public place.
Ken, thank you very much. It's been nice to have you on for the first time. Appreciate it.
Yeah, it was fun.
Here's what else you need to know today.
The United Nations was founded on truly noble goals. These include affirming the dignity and worth of the human person and striving for international peace.
In his first visit to the United Nations as president, Donald Trump praised the organization for its intentions, but called for major reforms in its operations, saying it's become bloated and inefficient.
While the United Nations on a regular budget has increased by 140% and its staff has more than doubled since 2000, we are not seeing the results in line with this investment.
On Tuesday, the president will deliver a closely watched speech to the UN. The Times reports that, unlike his predecessors, who sought collective action on issues like terrorism and climate change, Trump will emphasize the rights of individual nations and the need for greater accountability within the UN. That's it for The Daily. I'm Michael Barbaro. See you tomorrow.
Over the last 25 years, the world has witnessed incredible progress, from dial-up modems to 5G connectivity, from massive PC towers to AI-enabled microchips. Innovators are rethinking possibilities every day. Through it all, Invesco's QQQ ETF has provided investors access to the world of innovation. Be a part of the next 25 years of new ideas by supporting the fund that gives you access to innovative companies. Invesco QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. There are risks when investing in ETFs, including possible loss of money. ETFs' risks are similar to those of stocks. Investments in the tech sector are subject to greater risk and more volatility than more diversified investments. Before investing, carefully read and consider fund investment objectives, risks, charges, expenses, and more in prospectus at Invesco.com. Invesco Distributors, Inc.